Welcome to Recovery Rocks, where we talk about all things recovery and music. I'm Tawny.
And I'm Lisa, and we're really glad you're here. Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's Lisa, and I'm here with my podis.
It is your podis, Tawny.
Welcome. Today, we wanted to talk about a question that we get, each of us. It's interesting that we both get this same question because of our circumstances. But one of the questions we get is, how have you not relapsed in the time since you got sober? And it's a little bit more complicated, I think, of a discussion than that we've had before. And I can start off by saying that, you know, I hope to have 17 years sober in April. And I have been fortunate enough that relapse has not been part of my story so far. Again, for me, you know, I do 12-step. And so it's very much a one day at a time thing. I've never in my life said that I will never drink again, because I can't. That's too much to even, there's no reason to take that on. Why even say that? So I don't. And it's always been just for today for me, which, you know, was the only way I could do it at the beginning. And I really feel most comfortable still all these years later only doing it that way. And, you know, my story is that I had this, you know, horrific 12-year slide down that led to the last 18 months being alcohol and cocaine around the clock. I had my bottom was on a day where, despite the fact that I had so many mornings woken up and wished I hadn't and just wanted to not be around, for some reason on the actual morning that I thought I was having a heart attack or had finally overdosed on cocaine, that something in my brain like snapped and was like, wait a minute, I don't want to die. And that was the day that I decided to ask for help and decided that I was done, and checked myself into a psych hospital and detox floor on a 72-hour psych hold to be treated. And I was there for 5 days because I needed a medicated detox. And then when I got out, started going to an outpatient rehab at night, two nights a week, and started going to 12-step meetings. And I have been fortunate in my recovery and have not drank since or picked up drugs since. And, you know, frequently people say, well, you were so addicted. Like, it just doesn't seem possible that you could just go into the hospital for 5 days and then you never drink again. And, I think what that misses is a few things, like the factors leading up to that day and then the factors that were in place after that day. So over the course of those 12 years of descent, I had tried, you know, as every step down the ladder, I kept telling myself, okay, yeah, this is bad. This is, you know, not a positive development, you know, whether it was when I started drinking at lunch or whether when I started needing to drink in the morning. And I would say, but I can get this under control. I know it's bad, but I can get this under control. Why wouldn't I think that? You know, I had that was in a successful career. I had a great apartment, friends, family, like what hadn't I gotten under control? And why would this be any different? And so I would do all the time for many years, things like testing myself on, you know, okay, like if you do this, then that's bad, or try and power through and say, I'm not going to drink for, you know, 3 days and I couldn't do it, or I'm not gonna, you know, all the times that I sort of hovered around the edges and would be like buying books about what, you know, I remember buying some book about how to quit alcohol, but not like the books that you see today. They weren't out yet, but like it was, and I opened it and it was all about God. And I was like, that's not going to be the way. That's not going to help. And I was exhausted. I was just so sick and so self-loathing and all of that, that, you know, there had been, I had tried everything to change the way I drank and to try to do it in a different way, different solution. I had changed jobs. I had moved cities, gotten married, gotten divorced, like done all these things in my effort to try and get it under control. And I had, you know, but I had not been ready. And for me on that day, when it was literally like I thought I was actually dying, you know, that was when something snapped. But it had been, it hadn't been like one day I was told, you need to get sober. And I went, oh, okay, and did it. You know, it had been years of anguish and getting to the point where in my brain, I was ready for that. And then I got out, you know, in the hospital, I got diagnosed with major depressive disorder and anxiety. And I started on antidepressants. And that was enormous in helping me to be able to stay sober when I got out. And I dove into a recovery program and got, you know, a lot of support. And also, you know, I have to be honest, like I was incredibly fortunate. I hadn't lost my job. I hadn't destroyed all my relationships. I didn't have a court date waiting for me. You know, I was as fortunate as you could be coming out. Like I was teed up to be able to do well. And so, you know, those three things, the, you know, being truly, truly done, like feeling in my gut, like I cannot go on. And then being able to get appropriate diagnosis and medication and not having, being fortunate enough to be in a position where I could get the help, access the help, and not have to face, you know, really challenging consequences that would have put my, you know, been incredibly difficult in early recovery. That's sort of where I chalk it up in the first place. So I don't know, what are your thoughts on that, Tawny, when you get that question? And what do you think it's all about?
Well, so much of what you said is relatable, especially the part about managing, trying to manage the, you know, the drug use, the alcohol use, trying to just, you know, I'm only going to have one drink tonight, or I'm only going to have two. And just how exhausting that I'm exhausted just thinking about the mental energy that I put toward that. But that's also, you know, I don't know. Like, do we call that a relapse of like these moments of, you know, before I got sober this time of, you know, my managing of saying, I'm not going to drink for a month. And then I would do a month, but maybe I would make it 2 weeks. You know, was that technically a relapse? I don't know because I wasn't really serious about it at the time. It's more of these like more testing myself to see if, you know, like if you can't make it a month, then you really have a drinking problem.
Right. You know, like what a lot of people do with dry January.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, for me with relapse, I'm very grateful that, you know, on this journey, I currently have five years and some change without drugs or alcohol. And, you know, I will say there was a time I was drinking a non-alcoholic beer and my friend was drinking a beer and we got ours switched and I took a sip of it and it was like, it was actually very anticlimactic because I was like, oh shit, I just drank a beer. And I was like, I should be spiraling right now, but it's like not that big of a deal because it wasn't on purpose.
It was an accident. Like, yeah.
It was an accident. So, so that happened, but, I'm open about having issues with sex addiction. And that is something that I did relapse in sobriety. And, you know, I've talked about this on the podcast and in articles before where I was about 3 years sober going through a breakup and I acted out in my sex addiction of like, you know, I went to a concert with like the goal of I'm going to hook up with someone tonight. And there's nothing wrong with that if you don't have a problem with it. But I was I was using it the same way I was using alcohol, was like, I want to feel validated. I want to feel loved. I want to be touched. I want to, you know, have sex and forget this pain. And so for me, and that's something that I had to work through with my therapist, and it was, you know, it was really challenging, but, you know, I think it's important to bring that up too, because when we get sober, we figure out these other issues that we have, you know, like,
oh, our my gosh,
underlying mental health issues, other addictions. You know, you and I are both very vocal about having work addiction and perfectionism. And, you know, that's something that you and I both get caught up in, where, you know, I frequently tell you, I have too much on my plate. I need to cut back. I'm overwhelmed. And then I take everything off my plate. And then I'm like bored. So then I start to add one or two or three things. And then before I know it, I'm spiraling again because I've committed to too many things. And that is, you know, that is a habit. That is my work addiction. So, like, I think, you know, I wanted to talk about those kind of things too, because it's not just alcohol and drugs that we struggle with.
No, not at all. I mean, the things that have gotten me, because, you know, when I was first getting sober, I had heard a lot about transfer addiction, and I have had historically a lot of issues with food, with sweets in particular. And one of the things, there's this great book, if anybody is just first getting sober, it's called Living Sober. And it just has all these tips in it that, you know, about what you, can do to kind of, you know, get through these things that you haven't done before, like your first, like things, you know, like going to a cocktail party for work or something that you need to go to. And, you know, it said, you can show up late and leave early. And I was like, you can, you know? But you have to be there when the bar opens. And so one of the tips in it was that if you get cravings, frequently a piece of candy or something like that will kill it. And if you think about it, it's like, yeah, if you eat like a chocolate bar, you're not really like craving a glass of wine after that. Or maybe you are, I don't know. But, you know, or like a martini, maybe you are. Anyway. So I decided I would be like the Hershey's Kisses lady, you know, in the office. And I decided, I got this bowl, you know, in an office frequently, somebody's got a bowl of candy out or whatever, jar candy. And so I put all the Kisses in the bowl, and I figured like people can come in and hang out and they'll, you know, enjoy a delicious Hershey's treat. And then if I need one, I can just grab one. And then I found I was refilling the bowl, had to buy bags like twice a week because I was huffing all the Hershey's Kisses. And that just was like, okay, that's not tenable for me in terms, you know, paying attention to like, is that, so what is that? Is that some sort of relapse because I'm stuffing my feelings with chocolate? Like there, yeah. You know, it's all, you know, I think we tend to think of these things as very cut and dry, like there is a line you cross. And yes, for me, it would be a different line I crossed if I was started, you know, going for just one drink or something like that after work, than if I have a couple of Hershey's Kisses. But it was there for the same purpose of self-soothing, like, you know, feeling anxious or feeling overwhelmed or whatever it was, and wanting to make shut that down in some way. And for me, like, food can do that. For you, it's been sex. For both of us, it's been work. I definitely did that. And you know, I got very bad with online shopping also. That was like bad, bad, bad. And, you know, those are forms of, you know, it's not drinking. Like I always, and I do, I always say like sometimes, you know, when I'll want to just have whatever I want, I have to be careful because the way I have a somewhat broken relationship with food about what I eat and how I eat. But you know what? I always say like, it's not vodka, it's not cocaine, it's okay. But you have to watch those things because you can go into a whole different spiral on that. And, you know, that is not, well, that's not officially a relapse. That is sort of like getting into something that is less sober than what I'd like to be.
No, that's so real. And I'm glad you brought that up. It's not black and white. It's not cut and dry. This stuff is nonlinear. And, you know, how far do you want to take it? Where, you know, there's times where I've definitely just like had a Netflix binge because reality was too hard and I just didn't want to deal with it. And it's like, at what point is that a problem? And at what point is that, you know,
self-care.
There's magazines that would call that self-care. So it's so personal, and you know if you're avoiding something. Like, and there's also a healthy amount of time that you can postpone dealing with something. You know, if life is really hard, you know, that doesn't mean you have to like dive into dealing with personal work. Like, you don't have to right. do that all the time, because we're humans and we want to escape.
And we need breaks. Yeah.
Life is hard. And like, you know, there's people that can have a glass of wine and it doesn't mess up their lives. And, you know, they're able to have that, you know, that, I guess, checkout where you can just kind of, you know, and just kind of, you know, relax and shoot the shit with your friends. And, you know, you and I can't do that.
No.
But like, what can we do that is maybe more social or maybe socially acceptable? But like, it's so messy.
It is messy. And it's like the thing you nailed it with the idea of like, some people can have a glass of wine because they enjoy the taste and it makes them feel a little relaxed and then they're done. Like, to me, I look at that and I say, why bother? Like, that's not enough. Mm-hmm. You know, I would rather not, because for me, if I had the glass of wine, then my mind's on the next one. And when can I get it? And I might not go full bore the first time I have a glass or two of wine, but I will eventually, because it will take over my mind, because that is my disease. That is my, you know, that is my setting. And whereas if I'm, you know, instead deciding, okay, I'm going to binge some Netflix, it's much easier for me to say, or in fact, it's not even, yeah, for me, it's not even a comparison. I can say, okay, it's a Sunday, it's rainy, I've been running around, I've been doing whatever, I'm going to just be in bed and watch Netflix today. And knowing that that's not going to lead to like 3 days of Netflix. You know what I mean? That's something that I can do, that take that break and feel like, okay, I got, you know, I just recently binged Bridgerton. And as I kept hitting next episode, I was like, all right, but I know when I'm done with this, I'm not going to start binging another show. As opposed to with me, like with a glass of wine, I'd be like, okay, I know when I'm done with this, I'm going to go look for another bottle. So, yeah, it's, and that to me is sort of like that line between self-care and abuse, is like, can you, you know, do it safely in a way that it doesn't take over everything. And I'm sorry, but yes, the Duke in Bridgerton did take over my life for a day.
He's hot.
He
is very sexy.
I'm obsessed.
It seems like what we're saying here is that like addictive behaviors are just kind of everywhere. Right. And it's not, you know, it's not just drugs and alcohol. It's not just, you know, it could be shopping. It can be gambling. It can be food. It can be Netflix. It can be
anything.
I mean, you can become, you know, either physically or mentally addicted to something where you think you need it to move on. And it's such a fine line, and it's so personal for each person, but it's, you know, I guess that's, you know, another layer of the work in sobriety is figuring out, you know, being more cognizant of your actions. And I think, you know, if something becomes problematic, pretty quickly. And, you know, which is why we're always advocates for, you know, if you can afford a therapist and, or if you can find a support group that works for you, you know, to have a sponsor or an accountability buddy or someone that you can talk about these things with. So you're not, you know, suffering in silence or even questioning in silence. Right. Because it's most likely you're not alone. Like if you're struggling with something, Lisa and I are proof that you are definitely not alone in that. And these are, you know, these are tough times that we're living in, and it's easy to slip into some mindless behavior. And so it's like, there's nothing wrong with that. Like we were saying earlier, but it's, you know, when, you know, mindless behavior becomes pure, like, unhealthy escapism.
Right, right. And I think in lockdown, I mean, everything has just been so exacerbated. Like the way I always say it is like, you know, it was like someone just took a snow globe and shook it up and put it in front of you and said, this is your new world. Like you have no idea. It's a totally different layout that you're looking around at. And, you know, it leads the stress that has been on people is insane. And the numbers of people who have reported mental health challenges during this time has skyrocketed. And how do you cope with it when you're sitting, you know, in lockdown or whatever, when you're at home and you can't go anywhere and it's you to manage all these competing things at once, and you just need to get out of your head for a bit. You know, like you said, it is, you know, you sense it when there's something wrong. You sense when you're in a, basically, and though it's funny because the way I always talk about it is about change. Like, do you notice change? And if there's a change, what's behind it in your behavior, right? So like I say, like for people looking at their drinking during the pandemic, you know, were you somebody who used to go out with their friends a few times a week and have a couple drinks? And now you're finding that you are on Zoom happy hours or having quarantini like every night, and or you find that you're drinking every night at the end of the day, so where you never used to. So you just look at that and go, okay, I acknowledge that that's a change. Now what's behind that? Is it I just happen to like wine that much more today than I did before quarantine? Or is it that I can I find that in these extremely stressful times, I do have a glass of wine each night and it does help me, but I'm able to stop that at that one glass, and I'm monitoring myself to make sure I'm watching my own behavior on that. I acknowledge that that's a change, and, you know, I don't feel that there is something beneath the surface there. Or is it like, yeah, I need to drink to get through this. And if that's the case, then looking at it. And it's so different for different people, right? Like for me, I had to, you know, my bottom was landing in like a really skeevy psych hospital in Manhattan for 5 days. And for you, you took a decision, you were going to blog and see where it went. Like you weren't, you know, it was an experiment. For me, it was like an emergency. And we come at it, and yet we both make the decision that we want, that our lives are better this way. And we want to make the choices that keep us going this way.
Yeah. And both, you know, both stories are completely valid, and everything that falls in between is completely valid.
Right.
And
there's no right, wrong, good, bad. There's just whatever's in front of you.
Yeah, definitely. It's like we say all the time on this podcast, it's nonlinear and it is deeply, deeply personal. And you got to do what works for you.
Absolutely true. So, those are our thoughts. Any good music you're listening to these days?
You know, Lisa, I'm still in the 90s.
Wow. This is a 90s pandemic for you.
I know. I used to get really excited about New Music Fridays. New music comes out every Friday. So I'd get on Spotify and I'd be like, ooh, cool. What's new? What comes out? And lately I'm just like, it makes me feel really old because I'm like, I don't know any of these artists. And then I'll like listen and I'm like, this is not for me. And then I just go, I'm like, all right, I'm just going to listen to Blink-182. I can't deal with this.
Oh my God. I feel like the same way. I feel like I start to listen to new music and I'm like, I'm so old.
It's okay. Cause there's, you know, I'm still discovering bands from the, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s that you know, there's just tons of stuff in the vault there that there's so many bands that we'll never even listen to because there's too many. So
totally.
I'm just enjoying that. What about you?
I mean, I listen to a lot of, a lot of older stuff because I like to kind of get transported into different, it brings back memories. But I had, after watching the inauguration, I don't know if you watched the special was on that night with all the entertainers and watching Springsteen sing. And I grew up in New Jersey. Total Jersey girl. And I went to my first Springsteen concert I guess I was like 13 years old. It was the Darkness on the Edge of Town tour, like 1979. And I can't tell you how, like, I cry. I remember like weeping the first time I saw Springsteen at that age and just, you know, growing up that way and then seeing him just like in this, I was feeling very sentimental and whatever, watching the whole inauguration thing, but to see him start out like that. So I've been listening to some Bruce. I've broken out Darkness on the Edge of Town again. I've been listening to, and I like his really older stuff, like the early stuff. So I like, you know, Greetings from Asbury Park, The Wild and Innocent, East Street Shuffle, and then Born to Run and Darkness on the Edge of Town. That's pretty much my core Bruce.
You know, I love Radio Nowhere.
Bruce?
Yeah, it was like one of his, I mean, it was probably like early 2000s, it was like a pop hit.
Oh my God, I have to find it. I don't even know it.
I mean, when I say pop, it's like, you know, more like pop rock, but like it was really good. I never really got huge into Bruce. I've always like, you know, respected him and I don't have a bad thing to say about him. But like we were just saying, there's so many artists to get into.
Yeah.
And I guess my addictive personality, I can't just like listen to a song. I need to like listen to a band's catalog and then read their Wikipedia page and then figure out where they stand politically. And I need to like deep dive. So I have it in my head that I will be on a trivia show at one time and I will need to know all of this about a certain band. So
that
it's like, it's a lot for me to get into a new band.
Yeah. I get it. Yeah. I think we're on the same page there. So, well, this is, this is food for thought. Just remember that, you know, everybody's journey is different and there's no right or wrong way to do any of this. And until next time, we'll see you then. Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.